It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Yeah, chilling out here in the 4 o'clock hour. Get fired up! Let's go! Cofield and Company live on the Strip. Treasure Island. Golden Circle Sports Bar. We got the pregame on for the CFP between Alabama and Oklahoma. Again, Oklahoma is 2, and the total is 42. I'm sorry, I can't stop laughing at Nick Saban with this jet black hair that he's got. His vacation home commercial, he had the same sort of hair. This is even darker. This is craziness. He's ready. He's in his prime.
He's running an Airbnb. A bed and breakfast.
Man, see, you got the wrong branding on that. Yeah. That's actually not the company he does it for. Let's get to the Big Four here on this Friday.
Battleborne Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at 4. Number 4.
MountainWest Conference slate came out yesterday on the football side. You know, they're trying to pump people up for the new conference look with some schools added and the Disloyal 5 moving on. What'd you think when you saw UNLV with games at home against NIU, Wyoming, Nevada, and UTEP on the road, Hawaii, Air Force, New Mexico, and San Jose State? I saw that at least one San Diego State fan was like, look at this. You're going to rue the day that you didn't come to the Pac-12. It's like, worry about the Pac-12, San Diego State fans.
Yeah, I would say the road games are not the easiest. UNLV, you would rather see New Mexico, potentially Hawaii. I mean, obviously Hawaii was already here. This year in New Mexico, like that's tough, and you know, probably don't want to go to Air Force. But look, there's not necessarily easy road environments in the Mountain West, even though there's not good teams, right? All of them. But yeah, I think the schedule sets up okay. They've got some tough non-conference, so if the goal is to potentially make the playoff next year, which it should be, got to get through the non-conference and then navigate this conference schedule, which is not the easiest, and then play that out. And hopefully, at some point, they, you know, take my brilliant idea of the Mountain West Pac-12 championship game to kind of send a team into the CFP.
Can that happen soon with the bickering between the two commissioners?
Potentially.
Or do they have to see it play out where neither conference gets a school in, even with a great record, and then they're like, hey, we don't have to join forces at the conference, but we need to boost each other up here by having a head-to-head. And then maybe that'll make us look more attractive over the American. I mean, here's the other thing. Who knows? 3-4 years from now, if the freaking king of all evils in college football, Nick Saban, continues with his, I don't know what he's doing, calling the group of six AAA, and they should have their own championship. I don't get it. We saw Nick Saban and was it Herbie on the side of Lane Kiffin, which they did not disclose that they all, you know, were working at or deal with the same agent. Was this an ESPN thing? Because Herbie's been really strong on this too, saying the group of six should be out of the playoff completely. Is this an ESPN thing where they're like, hey, fellas, do us a solid and mother blank the group of six?
Potentially. Yeah, try to set something up and get a deal done so we can have another playoff. I'm sure they'd love that. I'm sure ESPN would love to have a playoff. And I also think TV would be the driving force potentially in a Mountain West Pac-12 type title game. If they end up, we'll see, sharing, hint, hint, a network that they are on in the future. And the network says, you know what? I don't know what a UNLV New Mexico game does for us. I don't know what a Boise, you know, Oregon State game does for us. But I know what a, you know, whatever, Boise New Mexico or Boise UNLV with the winner getting a boost to their CFP profile. I know what that does for us. Do that, and that network might be the one that pulls the strings. That would be interesting to see.
Along with the note of the conference schedules coming out, Micah Alejado, who, of course, prepped here at Bishop Gorman, he's a Hawaii quarterback going into his redshirt sophomore year. He's 5'10 and 180 pounds, but he's outstanding. Maybe could look into the portal, get some money, and leave. Well, he made it official that he is staying. Anthony Calandri made it official at the beginning of the week. Calandri is, you know, 6 foot and, you know, about 200 pounds. Both of them would be long shots to make the NFL, but we know that smaller quarterbacks can make waves even at the highest level. We just saw Diego Pavia basically pull Vanderbilt from the brink of nothingness. Are you surprised both guys have said, you know what, going to pass on it, and we're going to stay put?
5'1", Diego Pavia.
5'9 and 3/4".
Those pictures, at the Heisman ceremony.
It's crazy.
Where other 6 foot guys like Julian Sain are towering over him.
I actually heard a prominent voice on college sports radio say for sure that Diego Pavia is getting drafted. I would bet everything I have that he's not getting drafted. And I'm not saying that the Heisman comments will do him in. It is simply a matter of measurables and optics. He's a undrafted free agent. Come on now.
I think most likely that's the case, for sure. Yeah.
By the way, I don't have a lot to bet, so it's not really that risky.
You're not giving a book $100 million liability like Jake Paul is?
I want to build on that a little bit. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised. I thought for sure UNLV would have a hard time keeping Calandria. They must have found money somewhere, and that's legal, so that I'm not accusing them of anything. They must have found some money somewhere. Because of what you just said, he's not necessarily an NFL prospect, and he is really, really good. And this is his opportunity to cash in. And he should find money wherever he can. And I hope that it is at UNLV and that they found it for him. And that's good. If it was out of loyalty, that's really cool. But this is his chance.
I think he's getting money.
I think so, too.
I mean, I don't know that he's getting – would he get $800,000, $1 million, $1.2 million from a Power Four? Maybe.
Probably.
I don't know. But he's getting something pretty good. Number three.
Number three.
Fantasy football, this round started last night with TNF, and there were some breakout performances in that game, but a lot of injury questions going into this week. And while I'm not a gigantic person on fantasy football, we know you're in like 93 leagues.
82.
How many are you still alive in the 82? And so how much are the injuries affecting you or your opponent?
21 redrafts. 14 semifinals, 2 championship games this week. So pretty good percentage that I'm alive in. And my two most drafted players this year were Javonte Williams, which I got in almost every league, and Puka. So pretty good night last night. I was pretty happy with that. But, yeah, there's a lot of decisions to make. Like, am I going into this week potentially starting Audric Estime in a ton of semifinals? Yes, I am. And if you're like, who's Audric Estime? He will be the starter for the Saints this week against a very, very bad Jets team. It's a tough call. But I'm going to go with it. Like, there's a lot of really fascinating injury decisions to make around the league. It does sound like the Texans might have a couple of different guys available. That's tough. Marvin Harrison's coming back. Do you still start Michael Wilson the way that you've been starting him the last couple weeks? That's a tough call. Jacoby Brissett, are you relying on him in a fantasy semifinal? Maybe. Like, there's just so many.
He's been good.
He's been really good in terms of fantasy, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, now he's got all these weapons and he's going against an Atlanta team that has some missing pieces on defense and is, you know, giving up a lot anyway. Like, that's an interesting one. But all these, Josh Jacobs, like he said earlier in the week, he's playing. I don't think he is. So that becomes a fascinating decision as well. So, I mean, good luck to everybody out there. I'm going through the same struggles and the pain that you are right now. I think already today I've probably made, I don't know, 60 or 70 tweaks to lineups and just bouncing the guys back and forth. It's a wild weekend.
Number two.
Number two.
Big 4 at 4 in this hour is brought to you by Battleborne Injury Lures. 766-1400 is the number. Dial from anywhere in the state of Nevada, up north, 775-766-1400. I saved this one for you because I wanted an answer. Ian Rappaport, I saw, tweeted out, it's been a challenging season in Vegas, but the Raiders have some success stories, like linebacker Devin White is a big one, has emerged as a comeback player of the year candidate in Pat Graham's scheme. Bill Williamson, who's been covering the Raiders for a long time, retweeted it and said, tell me you don't watch Raider games without telling me you don't watch Raider games. What does that mean? That Devin White hasn't had a good year?
Devin White's had a pretty terrible year.
Okay.
I think it's pretty fair to say.
So I figured Bill was to be trusted here. So I hate to call media people on the carpet because I think, you know, most of us are trustworthy. But at the highest level, we know guys have been kind of skewered and outed for doing favors for agents and players. Is this a Rappaport favor for an agent?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's okay, it. We can move on. That's all.
That's what it is.
I mean, when I saw it, I was like, I don't remember us talking about him much as having a really good year, but National Football League insider is saying he had a great year, comeback player of the year, and then Raiders beat writer's like, bro, you don't know what you're talking about. Have you watched any games?
Well, easy with that term. but, yeah, I would say this is an agent saying, hey, my guy's about to need a contract. He's got a ton of tackles. Can you put this out here? And then I think he's a Jimmy Sexton guy, actually. So, that's a very powerful agent that is out there saying, hey, need this boost, put it out. No, teams are not fooled
Of course not.
They're going to do their own grades. They're not going to listen to freaking little Ian Rappaport freaking but tell you that he had a great year.
But you're trying to build the buzz, and that's what you do. And by the way, when people say, like, why do national reporters get all these
because they kiss people's asses.
This is
and
why.
They're willing to lie.
Yeah, this is why.
And embarrass themselves. Top story.
Number one.
Didn't mean anything in a bad way. Rap Sheet is a great guy. Rams Seahawks, 2-point conversion last night. The world is aflame on this one. Let's start with the call itself. What did you see? What was the call?
I mean, obvious and easy call. Don't see the controversy. It's weird. It's strange to watch. I'm sure people are, baffled by it. But if you actually watch the play, there's really no question what happened. I think it becomes a little bit more interesting or, more of a storyline because of what Puka Nacua said this week, saying that, officials are there to get on TV, and there's no better way to get on TV than to make a wild-seeming call, even though it's the correct call. That, to me, is kind of what happened in this situation. The referees did the exact right thing. If Puka Nacua hadn't said what he said, it might be a little bit different. But I think people are very often, consumed with this. That looked crazy. But at the source, at the root of this, it wasn't crazy. It was a very obvious play. It's thrown backward. It's on the ground. It's picked up. That's a two-point conversion. Nothing crazy about it or wild. It just looks weird.
Puka, after the game, tweeted last night, "Can you say I was wrong? Appreciate you, Stripes, for your contribution. Laugh out loud." He eventually deleted that. Then it was brought up to Sean McVay in the press conference, and Sean McVay is a pretty calm and cool and collected dude. Not when he heard that.
No. I mean, he was caught off guard. He hadn't seen it. He didn't know about it. And so he's asked, what about Puka's tweet just now? And he said, "You mean the one earlier this week?" And they said, no. As you were walking here to the press conference, Puka tweeted, and it was like, what did he say? He just wanted to know. Now, the follow-up was, "Do you think he was a distraction this week?" To which Sean McVay said, "Did it look like he was a distraction this week?" He had
a distraction could be one thing. He was, certainly wasn't distracted.
No.
Because he went out for 12, sure. 225 and two touchdowns.
But a tough, watching that press conference, I envision, how we handle the press conferences, things like that, of, sometimes a coach pretends he doesn't hear anything or doesn't know anything. You could tell Sean McVay had no idea that tweet had been sent out. And that's a tough spot for a coach to be in to try to answer something he just didn't know had happened.
Yep.
And trying to deal with it and process it in the moment. That was a little bit weird. I will say I talked to multiple NFL players today, let's just say that, who said Puka was absolutely right.
That they do believe that is hashtag ref show going on.
And they actually showed me a clip on the phone of a play from last night and said, "Look at this. Tell me he's wrong." And I was looking at it and said, the theatrics of making a call on one play were wild. And tell me that is not just a ref trying to be on TV.
Will the NFL do anything about this? Will they at least look into it? They won't publicly lend credence to it.
No, and that's the issue. If they were going to try to do something, you would never hear about it. And if you ever ask and said, "Hey, sounds like you were looking into whether this is real and whether this is an issue," no, definitely not. They would always deny that, but they might.
And we know any internal memos discussing the topic will hit the shredder as quickly as possible, or the delete button and trash can very quickly. Golden Circle Sports Bar here on a Friday. It's a football Friday. We got Oklahoma and Alabama coming up. CFP game number one. Parking is free. Yep, it's on the strip. But parking is free. We got happy hour rolling for about another hour and 45 minutes with $5 on select draft beers. We're live at Treasure Island. About an hour away from John Mateer and the Oklahoma Sooners taking on Ty Simpson, healthy, and the Alabama Crimson Tide. Interesting note on a graphic a couple minutes ago on ESPN about what the transfer portal has done to college football. I think it's all been positive. 7 of the 12 starting quarterbacks in this CFP are transfers. And that's a reality moving forward. And it also means that in spite of what Pete Thamel was just trying to fan the flames on, which is 4 of the top guys in the portal right now, including someone like Dylan Raiola or Brendan Sorsby, Cincinnati and Nebraska quarterback. Sam Levitt's in there. Josh Hoover is in there, and he was talking about, did he say $5 million?
It's the going rate for one of the top quarterbacks in the market.
Yeah, which is absurd, because then what happens, and they might get that, but then what happens is other coaches can use that as an excuse. I wouldn't have that kind of money. Or media folks will then set that up as like, that's the standard. It's not the standard. And if you want to spend $5 million on a quarterback, you can go ahead and do it. That quarterback also could be the guy who's not a difference maker. And we saw there were plenty of teams this year that pulled an El Flopo on their quarterback choice. And it actually got coaches fired.
Yeah. And, I mean, by the way, like, look no farther than Michigan, where they paid a 17-year-old $15 million last year, which is
too much
wild,
and not ready. And, you know, he was solid, but he was not ready to be a national championship winning quarterback, and who knows if there were distractions with Sherrone Moore. Like, I feel it's our job to come on sometimes, and instead of just jumping in the muck and fanning the flames of overhype, we got to give you the truth. And another good example here is, and believe me, I got some Puka stuff to get back to as well. There's a lot going on here in the 4 o'clock hour. So we're live at the Golden Circle Sports Bar. We're on ESPN Las Vegas, on ESPN Reno. There is a Jake Paul-Anthony Joshua fight coming up. If people don't know who Anthony Joshua is, he's a legit top 10, if not top 5, heavyweight in the world. He's been in there with some of the best. He's 28-4. He's got 25 knockouts. He is a legit heavyweight. He has cut weight to get to 244 pounds at 6'5" for the weigh-in. Jake Paul is a cruiserweight who is now bloated. However he's put on the weight, I don't know. I would suspect, yeah. He's 216 pounds. He's 6 feet tall. He's going against a real boxer, a gargantuan. I think everyone watching the fight is like, okay, I hope we see a real fight, but if we don't, then we've seen these cases with Jake Paul in the past. We just saw a report that one of the books that's not allowed here in town, DraftKings, and maybe there's some reasons, this is a marketing move, but there's a claim that DraftKings has $100 million in liability if Jake Paul were to win the fight. I don't think most books in town are even booking the fight, which should tell you about their concerns about what these fights are with Jake Paul. Yeah. We're going to talk to Chuck Esposito in about 25 minutes. STN is booking the fight. Anthony Joshua is minus 1205. I don't know what the limits are. We'll ask Chuck.
If somebody were to come and guarantee me that the fight's on the up and up, I would absolutely suggest you bet on Anthony Joshua. Like, whatever you could clear.
Lay 12 to win a dollar.
Sure. Lay 12 million to win a million. Whatever. Like, there's it's not a fight if it's a real fight. Period. I don't know.
Some of the fights in the past have looked weird. Like, I'm really curious tonight, but what, they have the odds up for Anderson Silva is 50. He's fighting another former MMA guy in Woodley. He's minus 320. He will smoke Woodley tonight and probably knock him out. And Anderson Silva looked 1,000 years old against Jake Paul.
Yeah.
But I also think he would watching it, there looked like multiple situations where he pulled punches.
Yeah, I thought
he
so.
He had him pinned in the corner and didn't let go, and we know he's got amazing finishing power, knockout power, even with the pillows on his hands.
That's what, I mean, Tank Davis insinuated it before he was forced out of this fight for legal issues, but there was a lot of trash talk, and he said, if something goes sideways, he basically insinuated it becomes a real fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people were like, say it. And I'm sure there was something in the contract that he couldn't. Hmm. But he's like, if something happens, then it's real.
Why can't he now? He's on a lifelong NDA?
Probably.
I agreed to the fight. Now I can never speak honestly for the rest of my life.
Probably. And I'm sure he will come out at some point and talk about it. But yeah. I don't trust these fights. I don't. I'll probably watch it.
Yeah. So in cases like this, I mean, certainly attorneys are needed. You got to run stuff by them. I wonder what's going on right now in the offices of the NFL and maybe more local, not here, but in L.A. with the Rams, on what they're going to do with Puka Nacua, and not with the stuff with the officials, because that's certainly in their purview. you know, they can find him. What about his appearance with this podcaster the other day? And what a lot of people are saying was anti-Semitic action. What can they do? And also, do you know this Aiden Ross guy?
Yeah.
I mean, I was reading up on, he's got quite the track record of doing this in the past. And here's the other thing the NFL has to worry about. Wasn't Mookie Betts just on a show as well?
Everybody does a show.
Why? I know he's immensely popular.
For clout,
he's super
Steve.
Rich. Mookie Betts and Puka Nacua need clout?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, for sure. And it's, you know, you want to be, you know, part of the conversation. You want to be popular. You want to be trendy. If you go on, like, your instant credibility in this day and age, in this world, for sure. So it makes sense. I fully believe that Puka had no idea what he was doing.
You do. I was going to ask you that next. That
no idea.
That spinning a dreidel, flexing, and then rubbing your hands together, he didn't know.
I don't think he said you're I think he was like, roll the dice. But then it's, I've only watched it with no video, with no audio, but it didn't look like he knew what he was doing, and I don't even know that he would, even if you told him what it was. Like, it's very possible.
I think some defenders of this Aiden Ross would say, well, he's Jewish.
Well, sure.
You know what? Jason Whitlock's African-American. You ever watch his show?
Exactly. Look into it.
Anything for a buck.
Look into some of the things that Aiden Ross has said and done also.
Some of the people who have been on the show and what they've said and done.
Exactly. And
at the highest levels.
It doesn't seem like he's the, like, I'm,
these guys don't have agents who advise them on appearances?
Well, I'll say this. Like, I am technically Catholic. I was born Catholic. I was kind of raised Catholic in the church, went through the, you know, all the sacraments and everything. I've said some awful things about Catholics. Not on the air, but, you know, personally, I think it's a, you know, there's issues. And I could easily, if I said something publicly, hide me, hey, I'm Catholic. Doesn't make it any less offensive or awful to say it. So, you know, just because you can't just go out and just do anti-Semitic things. Be like, oh, I'm Jewish. I'm okay. It's okay. Like, not necessarily.
So what's the league going to do? Very thorny issue here.
It's going to be tough. I mean, it's going to be tough to do anything. It's on a live stream. It's not part of the game. Now, if he would have done it on the field, would have been different, which was the plan. That's what Aiden Ross was trying to get him to do. If he would have done it on the field, I'm sure that there would have been something, and I'm sure the league is trying to look in, probably exploring their options in terms of what they can do. They're certainly going to find him for the tweet and for saying what he said about officials. So they have authority over that.
What do we know about Puka the person?
Well, we know his brother likes to steal cars, allegedly.
I didn't see that story. I just saw some tweets like, rough week for the Nacua family.
His brother stole Laker's car, allegedly. Should say that. Puka, I mean, obviously spent some time growing up in Vegas, so know a lot of people who have known him. And from every, and we, I think you were there, right? Spent about 10 minutes with him at the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Was really, really good dude. Really good. We talked a lot about League Vegas stuff and, you know, some of the kind of mutual people that we know or whatever, but was very, very nice dude. Respectful to everyone, taking pictures, signing autographs, all this stuff. So you don't know somebody from that. But their interactions have all been very positive with him. I think he's a good dude who doesn't fully understand how famous he is, how everything he does is going to be examined. I think that's part of it.
Hey, James, do me a favor. Pull the herd cuts here, because I thought last night was really interesting as well. With Seattle winning, you know, Puka went off. Rams couldn't really deliver on what should have been a bigger lead. Seattle comes back. They get that wild two-point conversion. And, man, there's a guy who loves Sam Darnold ever since he came out in 2018. That is the herd. And, man, he was doing a victory lap today.
I'm not really into stats or anything, but here's a couple of interesting ones. The last four teams Sam Darnold has played for, started a game for, because he started one game for the Niners. His last 39 starts, he's 30-9. Here's another random stat that just, like, fell into my hands. Last night, Sam Darnold became the first quarterback in NFL history to win 12 games back-to-back seasons on different teams. Brady didn't do it. Joe Montana didn't do it. Favre didn't do it. Slingin' Sammy D did.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know if it was a family thing or an agent thing, but, man, he latched on to Sam Darnold at USC. And in that draft, he swore by him, and then things went south for years and years and years in the last 2 years. Sam Darnold has been resurrected, and Colin is fired up.
Yeah, the Rams dominated the first three quarters, and Sammy had a couple of bad picks. But the Rams settled for field goals in the red zone. Their special teams are shaky. Four punts by the Rams in the fourth quarter. Three straight three and outs. I see Darnold as relentless, doesn't pout, doesn't sulk, has a short memory, and he took advantage of opportunities.
Damn, sounds like Seattle got the ripoff of the century by getting him at an affordable free agent price.
Darnold's punt return was especially impressive, and then throwing a ball onto the ground to be picked up in the end zone, I thought was genius.
He has been leaking oil lately with the interceptions and the issues, so... Collins hitching his wagon to the Seahawks, and especially Sam Darnold again. I'm not so sure I buy it. Nice win last night, but we'll see what the playoffs hold for Seattle.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Coming up, Chuck Esposito, STN. The sportsbook here at Treasure Island, 5 o'clock hour. We'll check in with Curtis Terry, Runner Rebel insider, NBA insider, and Seattle Seahawks fan. Who I'll show you the picture during the break. Adam, he had good seats last night in Seattle. He was there. He texted me. He's like, something crazy's going on. He's like, all right, something crazy was going on.
Was he yelling at Zach Charbonnet to pick up the ball in the end zone?
Probably. Well, we'll find out if that was his. He was in the corner, so if that was the end zone closest to him when that ball got pushed into the end zone, and Zach Charbonnet just innocently picked it up. NBA Cup, you covered it this week, and I want to talk to Curtis about the NBA Cup. Did you cover the semis, too?
I did.
Attendance was weird on that one, right? They sold them as separate games?
Yeah, separate games. So, first game, disappointing, clear everybody out. Second game, come in, absolutely jam-packed.
Okay, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Pretty good crowd for the final.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, it wasn't as full as it was on the Saturday late semi, but it was a pretty good crowd. It certainly wasn't like noticeably empty. There was definitely seats available. You walked in, you're like, oh, pretty full.
Word is out that the NBA may look to move the NBA Cup semis and finals, especially the final.
Yeah, apparently Amazon wants it because it sounded like the initial thing was give teams an extra home game. So the semifinal would be in a home arena, and then they would have the final in Vegas. And then sounds like Amazon, who has all the rights to this and was everywhere at the NBA Cup. I mean, it was an Amazon production for sure.
What does that mean? Like, give us an example. Just signage?
I mean, just, there was so many workers, and I was like, wow, there's a lot of media here. And then I realized, oh, no, these are all just Amazon. Like, they're photographers, videographers, producers.
Oh, like, be a nice bonus for the drivers who bring us our presence on no time's notice. I don't know how they do it, but
you're sitting, and they're becoming just a media company on their own. Obviously they're streaming all these events and everything else, but then a lot of photographers were complaining like there's no positions on the floor to shoot. And like, oh yeah, it's all Amazon photographers that are there. It's crazy. It was their presence was very evident. Anyway, it sounds like they want to push either the semifinals, the finals, or maybe all of them to, quote, historic college venues. All right, so you play an NBA game like at Allen Fieldhouse or like at maybe Butler, do a game there. I don't know if
UCLA and Wooden would be a nice site if the Lakers made it.
Does the Rack count? Or they
the Rack, Rutgers Athletic Center, absolutely. Sure. The Nets played there in some of their most successful years, yes.
Sure. Chrysler Arena, well, let's
8,500 seat bandbox. And I think they're, like you said, they're talking about Fog Allen and and probably Cameron. What did we do wrong?
I don't know with anything.
Did we not show up enough the last couple of years?
I thought the attendance was fine. I mean, I think, I don't know. I feel like they think it might make a better TV experience and if they were to move it. I don't think Amazon's concern is in attendance, so I think they more want the visuals. And T-Mobile, man, that blew me away. That there was a lot of talk, and this was crazy to me because I love the arena, but a lot of talk of Vegas getting a new arena.
And wait,
I was like, what? Like a lot of the national media and people that were in town, and they were kind of like, "I'm gonna get a new arena around here." Like it's kind of old now. I said, "It's 9 years old."
How is it old? How does it even look old?
They said, you know, being modern buildings that are, you know, last 4 or 5 years that have been built in the NBA, like a lot of the traveling media that goes around, like, I think one of the big things, and this was noticed, I'm not going to say the person. I will say I was on a tour of the building when it was being constructed, and they were showing us around the whole building, and there were some questions that were asked from a member of the media, and I was like, that's kind of a selfish question to ask, but then you could tell all the people that were guiding the tour, like, that's a, I don't know, like, hey, where's the media room here? Oh, we didn't build one. Where's this? Yeah, we kind of forgot that too. So they have to build a lot of tents outside, and I think a lot of the NBA media were like, what is this?
Coming up in less than five, Chuck Esposito on CFP action for tonight's game, the Jake Paul-Joshua fight, and also what's going on with the college football playoff tomorrow and NFL Saturday and Sunday.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Man, this is about as good as you're going to get on a Friday night. You want to get down here at Golden Circle Sports Bar. STN Book is the sports book here at Treasure Island. Adam Cofield, Chuck Esposito is in to talk about a very busy Friday, Saturday, Sunday coming up. What's up, Chuck?
All good, guys. Just kind of fun with college football playoff games, kicking it off, some NFL games on Saturday. It's just going to be a fun weekend.
So I'm going to start out offbeat with the fight because something caught our attention on social media. I'll run this by you in a second. But you guys are booking the fight card tonight. I saw Anderson Silva is minus 320 against Ty Woodley. Mm-hmm. And then that main event, you got Anthony Joshua at like minus 1,200 against Jake Paul.
Yeah, it's been kind of all over the board. We initially opened at 12. It's been as high as 14 and as low as $8. So I think because of the value and the price, a lot of people taking a shot on Jake Paul. I mean, Joshua, we know he's the bigger guy, his record in the ring. But these Jake Paul fights have drawn a lot of attention. It's a sanctioned fight. It's an eight-round fight. And we're going to be showing it in our books as well. So it should be kind of a fun night tonight with the playoff game and then the fight coming up right after that. And then the three playoff games tomorrow and two pro football games as well. So a lot going on in the world of sports right now.
I have to imagine your answer is yes, because you're booking it, but you fully trust that his fights are on the up and up?
I hope so. We're booking it, and yeah.
Well, here's the real question. I wonder how much liability you have on it, because there is a book that's out of town that is not licensed here that is claiming it has $100 million in liability on this fight if Jake Paul were to pull the upset. That sounds crazy to me in like a marketing move. I mean, how big can the limits be anywhere on this fight?
I don't know. I can speak for us that, you know, we do have some liability on Paul, okay. But it's not uncharacteristic for any fight in any weight class when there's a big favorite or a kind of a semi event like this. If you think of, you know, a certain UFC fighter with the last name of McGregor when he got into the ring. You know, we had some serious liability on him as well because of kind of the price and the lure and the popularity. And I think you can kind of say the same thing about Jake Paul. Joshua's last fight was over a year ago where he lost that fight and he got knocked out in the fifth round. But, you know, I think it's just, again, the value of the price and kind of the popularity and the whole atmosphere of it that draw people to a dog when it's a big fight like this.
Sure. You got a lottery ticket here, right? Let's talk
yeah,
CFP
exactly
game number
right.
one. Yeah, I mean, people like to dream. This one's been all over the place. It never got past three either way, but it looks like a lot of late Oklahoma money come in. Where are you on this? Because I'm seeing twos in places.
Yeah, we're not quite at that number yet. It kind of ping-ponged a little bit. We did open up Alabama 1.5. It went down, then back up, and now you're seeing it at its highest point in favor of Oklahoma at 1.5. Ticket count's about 58% Oklahoma. We're seeing a little Bama moneyline action show. Of course, this is a rematch of a game from mid-November that Bama won 23-21 in that game. You know, the Sooners only trailed in the game late, 21-20, before kicking that late field goal. They were pretty much in control of that game. You look at Bama, they're 10-2 straight up their last 12 games. However, in their history, just 1-4 against the number against Oklahoma. Oklahoma's gone under four of their last five games, but we're seeing some over money come in on this game, guys. Probably best case scenario for us right now is the game stay under the total of 42.5 as some overall good two-way action on the game itself.
Is a Friday night game good for handle for you guys, or would you rather see it on the weekend sometime?
I think it's great. I think a weekend like this, when the holiday's the next weekend and you've got the three games tomorrow and you've got some pro football games tomorrow, I think it's great to kick it off on a Friday night, especially once the game ends. We're going to go right into the fight. I think it's just kind of a fun weekend. We know everybody's kind of busy and honey to-do lists and stuff like that, but hey, if you're around the book and you want to come out and there's great drink specials and a fun atmosphere, I love that it's tonight on Friday night.
Is there a game tomorrow that you, as a on that side of the counter, are most worried about?
I don't know about most worried about. I think, you know, you've got two, and you look at the college games, you've got two gigantic favorites in Oregon and Ole Miss. And my guess is that as we get closer and closer to kickoff of those two games, the ticket count's going to continue to grow. It's heavily favored for the Ducks and the Ole Miss right now. Fairly good two-way action on Miami and A&M. I think you can make a case for the dog maybe a little bit in that game. And then the two pro games, a little bit one-sided on the early game, the Eagles-Commanders game. But the real interesting game to me is the Bears-Packers game. I mean, it's just kind of the Bears haven't played well against the Packers. They lost against them 2 weeks ago. The Packers opened up 1.5-point favorites. It totally flipped as well, guys. And I'm just, you know, I know the Packers, you know, no Parsons, the Bears, no Adunze, no Burden. But this has not been a good spot for the Bears. Green Bay is 11-2 against the number in their last 13 games against the Bears. So just a really, you know, really favors the Packers a lot. Don't know if the Bears can get over the hump. This is a huge game to see who ultimately can win the NFC North. A Bear win and a couple of crazy things happen, they still could be the number one seed in the NFC. But this is a monumental game for them. They have a juggernaut of a schedule. After this game, they play the following primetime game on Sunday Night Football against San Francisco. I don't think they've won in San Francisco in over 24 years. And then you've got the final game. They host Detroit, which very well could be flexed as well on that Sunday night to see who's in and who's out. I think this is a must win for a young Bear team, and they sit at a 1-point favorite right now.
Looking ahead to Sunday, that's a bunch of stuff that's tomorrow, which is very exciting. How difficult was last week kind of figuring out the market for what Phillip Rivers was going to be? And now that we've seen him, how difficult is it to put a number up on a Colts game where it's like, I mean, I guess he's out there and he knows the offense, but he can't throw it past the line of scrimmage. So what do you do with him?
Yeah, I mean, he got the cover, but we did not need them to win last week. We needed, at least Seattle to win but not cover. There was a lot of Colt dog money coming in. It's a Colt team that 4 weeks ago looked like a surefire playoff team to less than a 5% chance right now with the way the Jags and the Texans have played. The Niners, kind of in a goofy way, can maybe still be the number one seed in the NFC as well. But it's hard. It's hard to gauge. You got a lot of talent around him. If it's that running back with Taylor or all the young receivers and Downs and Pierce and Pittman and Warren, kind of very, very difficult to handicap, though. You know, I'm not sure what they're going to do with Richardson, if they factor him a little bit in and some Wildcat and some other stuff. But we have seen some Colt money show. Game was as high as 6.5 in some places industry-wide. It's just a full point lower right now. So the public has been a little bit enamored with Phillip Rivers and the Colts over the last 2 weeks, guys. But kind of a difficult game to handicap.
Let's bang out some of these Sunday games. What are you seeing on Ravens 3 against the Patriots?
Really good matchup for both these two teams. I think when you look at New England in this game, 8-3 against the number of their last 11 games. They've gone over 6 of their last 8 games. They're 10-1 straight up their last 11 games. And they're 12-5 straight up in their last 17 games against Baltimore. This has not been the same dominant Baltimore team. Just what? Excuse me. 1-4 against the number of their last 5 games. But it's a game I think they have to win. Baltimore needs this game. They've already lost to Pittsburgh, and they play Week 18 at Pittsburgh. So I think it's a must-win, and I think next week they play at Green Bay. So a really big game for both these two teams. But right now we've seen a little bit of money come in on the Patriots, who I believe are undefeated on the road this year at 6-0.
Chuck Esposito's with us, STN Sportsbooks. Right now they have a special when you sign up for the book. You get up to a $50 no-worry wager. More NFL. You know, Adam was mentioning how you book Colts games with Phillip Rivers. How do you book Chiefs games? Now it's Minshew Mania in there for the Chiefs. And my Lord, the difference in the number. This is all the way down to Chiefs 3 in Tennessee.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, we talk about in the past, guys, that a starting quarterback of Patrick Mahomes' impact and magnitude is worth at least 7 points. So the Chiefs would have been a double-digit favorite in this game. You have to think about, you know, what their psyche is now. First time in God knows how long they're out of the playoffs. It's a young Titan team that is just looking to kind of gain some momentum going into the offseason. They're still in the mix for the number one pick in the draft. Really, really hard game to handicap. And only really 56% of the tickets are on the Chiefs, but probably one of the lowest ticket counts on the Chiefs so far this year, without Mahomes, of course. And with them on the outside looking in, they will not be a playoff team for the first time in a lot of years.
What kind of action are you getting on Cowboys 2 against the Chargers?
Kind of interesting in this game. I mean, the Cowboys really need a lot of help now to get in. I think you look at them 6-7-1, their hands are full. They have to win out and get some real help. We'll have maybe a better idea if somehow the Commanders pull the upset against the Eagles. But Chargers 6-1 their last 7 games. But when you look at the Chargers, just a few weeks ago, they went into Jacksonville and got beat. They're only 1-4 against the number of their last 5 games. Rumor has it that Matt Eberflus, the Cowboys defensive coach, for the first time this year, won't be on the sideline, but he'll be up in the luxury boxes, kind of in their press box, watching the game, maybe calling better defensive signals here. Cowboys have gone over 5 of their last 7 games, and they've gone over 5 of their last 6 games against an opponent from the AFC. So if you like anything in this game, I think you like going over 49.5 or 50 points.
Chuck Esposito from STN. We're here at TI Vegas. We're hanging out at the Golden Circle Sports Bar. Come on down. Free parking. Happy hour goes up until 6 o'clock. The food to drink specials are awesome 24-7 here. All right, Broncos, for you guys, are they at 3 or 3.5 against the Jags?
Broncos right now sit at 3.5. You're looking at a Bronco team that has won 11 in a row, a Jag team that's won 5 in a row. I really didn't like the Jag team earlier in the year. I thought Lawrence just didn't seem like he was a good fit for in Cohen's offense, but he's really played well of late. Jacksonville is 5-0 against the number, their last 5 games. Their offense has generated a lot more. They've gone over 5 of their last 7 games. However, they are just 1-4 straight up in their last 5 games against Denver. Denver's won 11 in a row. They're 12-0 straight up in their last 12 games at home. They've also gone over 7 of their last 8 games when playing at home against Jacksonville. So a lot of signs kind of point towards both teams. They're both on winning streaks. They're both in first place. I mean, you think about the AFC guys. Patriots, Jags, Broncos. I don't think anybody would have predicted those teams to be on top of 3 of the 4 divisions in the AFC going into Week 16.
Last one in the final minute here. What's the betting look like on the Steelers and the Lions? Detroit is -7.
Slowly creeping up on Detroit. I think you look at Detroit all year this year. If they lose one, they come back the next week and win one. Pittsburgh comes off their big win last week. They're ahead of Baltimore now. They know they're going to have to play them again. They'll ultimately win the AFC North. They're 3-6 against the number of their last 9 against Detroit. They're 2-7 against the number of their last 7 on the road. And you look at Detroit, I mean, this is a game they have to win, I think. They run the risk of potentially a loss here, really being on the outside looking in. And you think about the Chiefs already out, Baltimore potentially maybe out, and Detroit maybe out. Man, I don't think anybody would have predicted that those 3 teams wouldn't be playing in mid to late January.
Chuck, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we will catch up with you next week.
All right. Sounds great, guys. Happy holidays to you guys and your listeners, and look forward to it. Have a great week.
Thanks, man. Chuck Esposito from STN. We'll get our picks out. I did my 5-game card yesterday. I've not been good lately. I'll just say that. It's not easy. Not easy down the stretch, and especially as you described. Well, I built on it with my comment about the Chiefs and how you handicap the Chiefs now, but yeah, I don't, like, I saw the celebrating about or congratulating about Phillip Rivers coming back and, you know, the Colts playing competitively, but I'm not buying that. The Colts are a dangerous team the rest of the way, and now the Niners have new life. With the result last night on Thursday Night Football, Niners have a chance here to freaking steal a lot of things back. Another hour on the way, kickoff's coming up for Oklahoma and Alabama. We'll give you a prediction on that. The rest of the CFP, plenty to get to, including Curtis Terry.